This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Yeah, that's like my number one advice for like younger comics when they ask me is, well, just live on stage.
Yeah. My favorite story about you was my first time seeing you was at J. Paul's.
Oh my. Southside.
And I remember thinking, this white guy doesn't understand. What's he doing in here? Like, shit, does he know a couple people got shot in here? Does he know it? And I was scared for you. And I remember you went up there and they were being complete assholes that night. And you turned your chair around to the wall. And you did your whole set talking to the wall. And I was like, this guy has a pair.
Hot breath. What's up, Hot Breathiverse? It's your boy, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot breath. That was a little dramatized. I'm sorry about that. I really exaggerated the hot breath on that one. But we have a hot breathisode for you that is one of epic proportions, so I had to do an epic greeting to you all. This is, of course, Hot Breath, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I'm on here interviewing comedy's top players, influencers, movers, and shakers. This week is no exception. He is actually one of my favorite comedians personally. We kind of came up in the game together a little bit. He is now making his second appearance on Comedy Central working with Kevin Hart. So it was perfect timing to have him hop on here. And just before we hop into it, this was our first live YouTube stream. So if you go to our YouTube page, Joel Byers Comedy, you can see the YouTube live stream of these we're going to start doing as well. So definitely check that out and check out this interview, okay? Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get into it. I am a little hot here down in Hotlanta. I'm about to overheat, so we're just going to hop into this interview. But if you do enjoy it and learn something, which there's a lot of gems in this one, definitely hit me up on social media, at Hot Breath Pod. Let me know what you thought, what you liked, what you didn't like, what you learned, maybe what you'd like to hear more of, if you'd like to hear a guest that you'd like to have on here. I'm all ears to making this Hot Breathiverse really a community where we can learn and grow with each other. So Hot Breath Pod on all social media, joelbyerscomedy.com is also the website. And let's get into it, okay? So now, drum roll, please. Without further ado, my hot brethren and sistren, there is only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Marvin Hunter. We all the way out here. What up, Unc?
What up, what up, what up, what up, man?
Yo, yo, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yo, it's been a long time coming here.
Yes, sir, it has.
This is that's your water, by the way. That's our
hot breath, hot sponsor. Breath. I love how you say hot breath. It's funny to me, man. This is glorious.
You listen?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah?
Hot breath.
Oh, snap.
I love that.
I appreciate you listening, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's all in good time. We've been meaning to have you on here for a minute.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But now we're getting you on here. Oh, there we go. Let me get a little volume. Can you hear yourself?
Yeah.
You good, boss?
Yeah.
All right. We good over here, boss? We good. All right, man. Yo, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse, Marvin Hunter.
Yes, sir.
Yay!
In the house.
So you're hopping on board. You're about to be on Comedy Central.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What a blessing. What a blessing, man.
How'd that happen?
Well, I did Kevin Hart's Heart of City, the Jackson, Mississippi edition.
Uh-huh.
And evidently they like me. I did pretty good. So they offered me my 30-minute special on Comedy Central. So, dude, you know, it's me starting in the game late. I just started doing comedy. I was 30.
Yeah, 2010, right?
Well, no, before that, I was active duty. When I used to be in the Navy. I was active duty doing it, but I was on and off, on and off. But I started professionally in 2010.
Oh, okay. You know what I'm saying?
But first time ever getting on a mic was when I was 30. But
in the Navy?
Mm-hmm.
What was
Hawaii.
That? Was that the competition?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I was stationed in Hawaii and got divorced and the heifer took everything. So had to go back to the barracks and new experience after being married for 11 years.
Uh-huh.
Was in a room with a guy and he was a comedian. And he wasn't that great. And me and him both thought that I was funny and I needed to try it. And one day I went up there and I asked the guy, you know, you think I can get on open mic? And he said, yeah. He called my name and I faded into the background. I didn't go up.
What?
And I was horrified. Next week, did the same thing again.
You said put me up and then you...
And I didn't go up. And then the third week I went, he told me, hey, look, stay the hell out of my place. You're not serious. I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this time. And he called me up and I went up there, got that first laugh. And I've never done crack, but I assume it feels like that.
Yeah.
And I've been chasing it ever since, man. You know, between deployments, I'd be on and off doing open mics here and there. And I take like a year break sometime. But once I retired in 2010, I went full time. So to have a Comedy Central special, and I know people who go their whole careers chasing that, it's just a real blessing.
What was your first joke?
Probably some hacky stuff I heard before. it had some. I'm from Mississippi originally. It had something to do with Mississippi being the boil on the ass of society. Something like that. And then something about pretty girls with stinky breath. It was something that had to do with that. But got some chuckles, and I liked it.
How many people were there? What was the setup?
About a hot 15. It was
15.
A small place. It's called Cigar Emporium in Pearl City, Hawaii, on the island of Oahu. That's where it was.
And you were you were scared, even though it was just 15 people.
I was horrified.
Uh huh.
I was horrified. The days of the open mics, I couldn't work. Back then in the military, if you go to medical and tell them you had diarrhea, they put you bed rest for the rest of the day. And so that's how you get out of work. So every day on Tuesdays, like, I would have diarrhea. Because I couldn't work and think about that little 3 minutes I had to do that. I was just that horrified.
Wow.
It's a true story. Yeah.
Had you ever performed before the open mic?
No.
No, that was your first time.
First time. I never had any aspirations to be a comic. I just love comedy. You know what I mean?
What made you want to get up then? If you had no aspirations.
Because the guy was horrible.
Oh,
and I was funnier than him.
Uh-huh.
And he was telling me, and I was just thinking about it. And then I went to open mic for the first time, and I was like, oh, man, these guys suck. Like, they could do it.
Right,
I could,
right.
It's more of a competitive thing. You know, if they could do it, I could do it.
Right.
I just kind of build myself up to do it, you know. But
you it goes well, but when do you bomb?
I bomb probably the next night. The next week, I bomb hard. Like, but the bug had already bit me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I remember maybe not the next time, maybe the time after that or something. But it wasn't that long after I ate it bad. I don't remember this chick standing with her arms folded in front of me, and she wouldn't laugh, and I was like, ma'am, what's wrong with you? She says, I'm waiting for the real comedians to show up.
Oh, bruh.
I wish a commode would have fell out the sky and bust that bitch directly in a...
That's so specific.
Freaking head, but...
A commode.
But yeah.
Have you ever been booed before?
I have, but not... In the traditional sense of bombing, I've never bombed. If you know, like, we're in Atlanta, you can bomb where it is an epic event. I've never bombed like that. I've had people just stare at me, stupid, you know. But I think I've had someone say, boo, you know, someone that just I said something like, something like that. But the whole crowd turned on me, and I never had that. But I've had them look at me like I was a science project. Definitely had that.
And in the Navy, if you're doing it while you're in the Navy, are you now like the funny guy in the Navy? Because wasn't Gary Owen in the Navy too?
Gary Owen was in the Navy. Yeah. Rodney Perry was in the Navy.
Yeah, yeah.
Few people. David Arnold was in the Navy. A few people that was they were in the Navy, man. Or Army, Air Force. Earthquake was in the military. Big Sean Larkins was in the Air Force.
Mm.
Lick Lavla was in the Army.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So a lot of
all them.
Prior military doing it. But I was always funny, but I would never call, like in school, I wasn't the class clown. I was the assistant of the class clown.
Okay.
I would alert him to the foolishness and just go stand around and just watch and laugh. I love to laugh more than I like to make people laugh. So, but I've always loved comedy, but from a small town in Mississippi where you're not really pushed to think outside of the box, no knock on small towns. I love my small town, but you know, you're not pushed to do anything other than what they can touch. Police officer, doctor, lawyer, that type of thing. So I never thought I could do anything like that. you know, but
it's Vicksburg, right?
Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Was that like the red carpet capital? Or
yeah, yeah. What they call it? That's part of the nickname, Hill City, you know, stuff like that. A lot of hills. But, you know, the famous Battle of Vicksburg from the Civil War was there. A lot of antebellum homes and.
Oh, dear.
That type of stuff.
A lot of gloomy reminders.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I literally grew up behind a slave quarters.
What?
Step out of my back porch, over the fence is the antebellum home called Anchuca. It's a bed and breakfast now. The back of it, where they have the people stay, is the old slave quarters. And so that's what I've never known anything else. It's the only home I've ever known. Step out of my back door, right over the fence is slave quarters. Yeah.
That's awkward. I feel awkward even just listening to it.
That's where I grew up. I mean, you know, right on the Mississippi River. You know?
How does that affect you and your identity growing up like that?
Well, my dad was also a civil rights worker. Oh, so okay. That's deep in me. You know what I mean? He was with SNCC when he was 19. And he's been shot at. He's been in explosions. The whole deal. So I grew up being very aware.
Huh. Of woke, that type of stuff. If you will.
Hmm?
Woke, if yes. you will.
Yes.
That's what the kids
yes.
are saying.
Yes.
Did you say your dad, did you say SNCC?
SNCC, Students Against Nonviolence, like with John Lewis, representative, and Stokely Carmichael, those guys, he marched with them when he was 19 Whoa. And 20.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he raised you to be like militant? Were you
not militant, but very much aware.
Uh-huh.
Very much aware. And I've never had blinders on to what's going on out here. My dad's not really, but if most of the people from back then, if you talk to them, they'd be like, well, this is what our existence was. And we have to manipulate around it. It's not, you know, everybody's not like, you know, militant like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, he was he's very passionate about equality and helping people to vote. So his thing was he was involved with this Freedom School back then, and they were registering people to vote. So in his efforts to register people to vote, he's been shot at. Ran off of people's land. He was in an explosion in a boarding house for them. Shot up in a church. Everything. He's done the whole deal. So,
oh my God.
And he's kind of Henry Hunter. He's a little bit of a local legend there in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Uh huh. What about your mom?
My mom was a housewife. She was a housewife. Yeah, she was a housewife the whole time. You know, but my dad definitely was out there involved.
Yeah, that kind of explains your Facebook now.
Yeah,
how you're just out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Facebook activism.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just go there.
I'm anti-BS uh-huh. for a lot of reasons. I definitely wouldn't necessarily call myself militant. I'm just anti-BS because I let everybody have it. And then you got to understand, 20 years military. I'm very no-nonsense about stupid stuff.
Yeah.
I just, it makes my skin crawl. So.
The nonsense?
Yeah. Stupid stuff. People playing crazy. Bullshit. Can we cuss on here?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you say bullshit. Whatever you want. Say it again.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Let him use you.
I don't have a lot of tolerance for it. So
yeah. when you're doing the military mm-hmm. and comedy, are you is the goal once you got the bug, you're like, okay, I need to get out of here so I can do comedy full time.
You know, it's crazy because I was funny kind of quick. And so a lot of people were like, you got to get out. You got to mm-hmm. get out. You're old, man. You got to get out. You're not going to ever make it. You got to get out. You got to get out. And I just resisted. I was like, I'm not giving up my military retirement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought about it briefly. And I was like, hell no. Hell no. Absolutely not. Because I left Guam. I left Hawaii, went to Guam. And I remember being told, if you don't go to the States, you're never going to make it. If you take these assignments to Guam, you're never going to make it. Screw that. I went to Guam. I did comedy in Guam. I did a lot of
comedy in Guam.
Yeah, I did a lot of hosting. You know, charity events, cancer things. And at the time, I had never performed in front of black audiences. Huh. So I was horrified. I was horrified to perform in front of black people. I'd never done it because we're hard. We're hard on. And I remember back before 9/11 happened, the BET style Def Comedy Jam used to do a circuit. It would go to Japan, Guam, Hawaii, and they would do that at Korea, but they stopped it. So they happened to have one coming from Japan when I was over there, And the DJ was a local guy, Chamorro, and he was scared to do it because it was going to be all black audiences because you got the Air Force Base. They're going to draw in all the black people. And so he asked me to do it, and I was horrified. And I'll never forget, it was Vanessa Fraction, Honest John, Frank G. And I was supposed to host for them 4 shows, 2 days, and I was terrified. But I actually did a good job. They all praised me, and I credit Vanessa with that to this day because that's when the light bulb went off in my head. I think I can do this.
When you overcame that fear.
Yeah, I said, I think I can do this. You know,
you woke up in a house with a civil rights activist, and then you're still afraid of black people.
Dude, because we're raw, dude. You know, it's different. Mainstream audiences are patient.
Yeah.
They're very patient.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very patient. We will crucify you. You have 30 seconds. You have 30 seconds to make us laugh, or it's going to be a bad day. It's going to be a bad day.
Yeah.
And I got over that, and when I did well, I was like, I think I can do this. People still were telling me to get out, though. They were still telling me to get out. And I was like, there's no freaking way. There's no way I'm going to give that up. And I was, at the time, I'm trying to get custody of my son, and people were telling me, if you get custody, how are you going to do comedy and be a single parent? How are you going to do this? Man, screw that. You know, got to get my son, and I'll figure it out. And I got transferred to South Carolina, and that's where I retired from, and left there, moved to Atlanta.
To do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you knew about the Atlanta comedy scene.
Oh yeah, I knew I had to come. I knew I couldn't. South Carolina was a dead end. I couldn't go any farther than what I had already done. So I had to come to Atlanta. When I came to Atlanta, man, stuff kind of took off for me.
Yeah. It seems like in 2010, you said when you retired.
I retired and I stayed in South Carolina maybe another year and a half, and then I moved here. The thing there, I was already kind of headlining. And I was working at my home club, which is the Comedy House in Columbia, South Carolina, doing well, hosting, featuring for a lot of guys from Atlanta that was coming through.
Mm.
And so when I moved here, I thought it was going to be cake. I thought they all were going to just embrace me and I was just going to blow and be gone. And it didn't happen. I mean, I got here and people were like, oh, hey, that's you. And that was it. It was like really not dealing with. But I humbled myself, just dropped down to the open mic ranks. Cream rise to the top.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's to this day, a lot of people in Atlanta think I'm newer than what I actually am.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? Because I was like, okay, start. And I'll figure it out. I'll learn as I go. And, you know, that's how it happened.
You've been full time since 2010? Like,
yes.
You're saying pro, just yes. Scraping by.
Straight
wow.
Comedy.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a hustle, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting. Well, you're funny, which always helps you get booked.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've been on like big things. I mean, you were on tour with Ricky Smiley, I think.
Yes.
Was
yes, like, I've been out with Mike Epps. I've opened up for Cat, Bruce. You know, been on TV a few times. So everything's working. You know what I'm saying? Always it could be faster, but the Lord does everything in His time. So yep. I mean, you know what I mean. But I've been blessed, definitely. I have no complaints.
What do you attribute to that? That success and making those connections with that level of people?
I have this thing that, and I say this, and I know it's gonna aggravate some people.
Oh boy.
It seems to me, and a lot of older comics, they agree. So I know I'm onto something. Comics a lot of times are not people. They're not people. They're not regular people. So they don't interact on a regular right. level. I try my best to be a normal guy.
Right.
A normal guy. And normal is actually appealing. But to be normal, you've probably had to do something else outside of comedy before. Because all you ever know is comedy. Your people skills are kind of just all over the place.
Right.
You know, I know how to interact with people. I know how to be a regular dude that's appealing. People like you. You get referrals. They think about you and stuff come up. You know what I'm saying? Someone referred to me as the meanest, nicest dude they ever met. Because I can be an asshole, hence the grumpy uncle.
Grumpy uncle,
but
yeah,
I'm a
yeah.
regular Joe. I'm a regular guy. I'm not here. I'm a humble. I come from humble beginnings. I'm not out there. Comedians can, entertainers can tend to be mentally out there.
Yeah.
You know? So I was talking to a comedian last night and I was like, you know, even at this point, a lot of my gigs are referrals. People just like me. They They want to refer me. Hey, this guy can do the job. And they know I'm professional. I'm going to be on time. I'm not going to come there. I'm not going to smell like weed the whole freaking time. I'm not going to be drunk. I'm not going to be chasing your waitresses. I'm going to be professional and on point with my stuff. So that's what I attribute to, you know, a lot of the success.
You're a good employee.
Yes.
Yeah. And that took me a while, even talking about comedians being people, mm-hmm. or like a person, however you said it, is like, it took me years to realize, like, I wanted to be in my head as a comedian, like, oh, I'm a comedian, and it's just me, and I'm an artist, I don't need anybody. But now I've found that as I've opened myself up to comedy, comedy has returned the favor.
Yes. Yes. You never lose sight of being an employee.
Yes.
And the one thing the military taught me, you'll never, I repeat, never be a leader if you do not know how to follow.
Mm.
You'll never be a good leader if you don't know how to follow. Because you won't be able to relate to the people that's following. A lot of people, they just don't, they don't get it. They don't get it. And it's so, you can look at, I'm sure you know this, you can look at some comedians and you can almost say in your head, you're not going to make it. Your life is going to boo you. You're not going to make it because I see what you're doing. You're all over the place. And if you don't make a turn here quick, it's not going to happen because you're going to turn people off. You're going to block your own blessings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and doing like over 145 of these now, these interviews, like there's some people I've interviewed who I'm like, oh, why aren't they further? Like they should be this or that. Yeah. And then when I meet them, there's always a reason.
There's always something. And you're sitting there looking in your head and you're like, you're actually hunting for it. And like, oh, there it is.
Yep.
There it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is, you know? But, you know, it's... That's harsh, but it is what it is. It is what it is, man, you know? And I always, older comedians, we have these conversations like, if you never worked a regular job, and you never interacted with people on a professional level, you could tell, they're all over the place, you know what I'm saying? And I said you can't make it if you never worked a regular job. But as a grown man on some grown man stuff, I can always tell.
Mm-hmm.
You never had a regular job, did you? You don't have any structure. None. There's none. So
discipline.
Yeah.
But I think that's a big part. It's just almost like a cheat code for younger comedians to start implementing now. Is just, hey, think of this as a job. Be an employee. Be cool.
Yep.
Be easy to work with.
Yeah. They got to like you. And I tell comedians all the time when they go to comedy clubs, I was like, you're worried about the stage. You should worry about the stage, but that's just half of it.
Mm.
Be nice to your wait staff. Be nice to the people. Tip heavy, because when the clubs have the meetings, your name's going to come up. And if you was an ass to the wait staff, you're not coming back.
Yep.
You're not coming back. So your complete people game has to be together too. Don't be an ass. I've never understood comedians that are assholes just all the time. Like, man, come on, man.
You know? Yeah, and you working with like pretty much the 1% of comedy, like we said, Cat Williams and Mike Epps and Ricky Smiley. What have you learned from being in their orbit?
The way that I take advice, and I give this advice to people is, you know, and I won't be specific, but I learn by looking at someone else's fuck ups. I see you fuck it up, and I'm not going to do what you're doing there. And I take that from the bigger names, the Lord, I mean, everybody. I just see you fucking up, and I know not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how I think that comedians say, how can I make it? How can I make it? Pay attention to the comedian that's fucking up. Don't do what he's doing. Pay attention to the comedian that none of the other comedians like. Don't be that guy.
What are some common mistakes you're seeing comics make?
Having no humility. None. Like you run the light. They give you the light. Fuck you. I'm do what I want to do. Mm. They tell you don't cuss. You cuss anyway. Like stupid stuff like that. You know? Do you not think that's going to follow you? Do you honestly think that's not going to follow you around? Because comedians talk, you know? And if you are walk around here being a fecal smear.
Fecal smear?
Then everybody's going to know it.
Fecal smear?
Yeah, everybody's going to know it. You're a shit stain. So, I mean, you're a shit stain and everybody's going to know it. People are going to talk.
Dude, your wordplay is so silly. Like, you have this joke where you say, an alley cat with alopecia.
Yeah, yeah,
I've been
saying
that all morning, dude. It's been stuck in my head since I'm going to be interviewing you.
Yeah.
Where does that stem from?
I was a planner for submarine maintenance for 8 years. So I had to write maintenance packages.
Huh.
So a lot of my vocabulary comes from that.
Hmm.
And I tell people that all the time. I was like, because you have to be creative with words. And a lot of times you see my posts like, be advised. You know, so you say that you close off a directive. Uh-huh. Or you begin a directive, be advised, da 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 da. And I wrote it so long, it has a part of my speech now.
Uh-huh.
That comes from that, man. You know, writing structural maintenance packages for submarines.
Well, I don't even know. That sounds like a foreign language.
There's a package to change the brakes on your car, right? That's a procedure.
Mm-hmm.
I was the guy to write the procedure for changing rudder stuff for submarines, for structural stuff.
Gotcha.
I was a welder, so.
Oh, you're a welder?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, manly man.
Yeah. I was a welder.
Did you ever go on a submarine?
Yeah. Like every day. Like,
but underwater? Like, you ever?
I've been out, but they didn't submerge.
That'd be scary.
Yeah. I've been out to do tests and stuff like that, but I never submerged. I never had desire to sink on purpose.
I'm good on that.
Yeah. I was also in two CB battalions before, so.
What is that?
Construction battalions for basically Marines with tools. Basically, Marines with a skill other than shooting.
See, that's what I love about your comedy is you are this like manly, intimidating man, but then your jokes like they do have like a silliness twinge.
Yeah. I'm a silly dude.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but yeah, two CB battalions, NMCB 1, NMCB 133.
How do you come up with your material?
Life. Mostly my act is me reacting to stupid shit.
Uh-huh.
If you think about it, like everything is me reacting. That's the aggravations, my personal aggravations or general aggravations or observations, you know, me reacting to those. So
do you actually write like pen to paper?
Not as much as I should.
Everybody
Most of it
that,
is in
yeah.
my, is in my head. I will admit I am horrible at actually putting everything down on paper. It's just kind of in here. I have outlines, many pages and pages of outlines, but actually writing everything out, I'm horrible at it.
Well, when you find these word plays like alley cat with alopecia, and do you have many more, but like how do you come up with those? Is that just off the top or you write those out?
Again, writing submarine maintenance, have it given specific descriptions, be descriptive.
Description.
Descriptive.
Yes.
And it's like, it's almost like it's in me now, you know. It is. So some stuff just comes to me, like, you know, just stupid. And the more stupid and absurd it sounds, that'll work. You know what I'm saying? I just, kind of like that.
That's almost your instinct. It's like, that's absurd. No, that'll work.
Yeah, that'll work.
Because that contrasts with what people assume about you on stage. Yeah. I found you can get a lot of humor just off. Like people, when they see you, as soon as you walk on stage, before you even say anything, they're building your story.
They're building your story. Absolutely.
So anytime you can break that story or that assumption.
Or use it. Or, you know, set the stage. Don't. Time that they're spending trying to figure you out, it's time they're not laughing.
Mm.
Establish who you are immediately. Like when I go off stage, I always tell them to play some ratchet. Play some ratchet shit. And I'm going to go up there and they're going to be bobbing to it like they always do. You like that? DJ, cut that stupid shit off. And I just immediately, grown man in the room.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. And so I establish who I am. Okay, now you know. Okay, now let's go forward.
Because
when you're sitting up there a lot of times and just, well, hey, nice jacket. Hey, who's this and that? Hey, man. Yeah. Establish who you are immediately and then go with it.
Confidence.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
They'll gravitate towards it.
They'll gravitate to it because just like you said, they're waiting. That's why I try to tell like a lot of female comedians, they get pissed when you say this. And of course, some of them get pissed now, I'm sure. But if you go out there too sexy, if you're overdoing it with the sexy, it's hard for them to know who you are because the dudes want to screw you and the women are evaluating you. So they're not hearing what you're saying. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, unless you have to be uber funny, you know, but if you go out there all dolled up a lot of times, you know.
That's how I feel when you wear those, when they wear those hats. I'm like, Marvin, you're looking too sexy, man.
Hey, I doubt if you can get a 12 people to agree with that.
So with Kevin Hart, was that a referral as well? How you connected with him?
Like I said, I reached out to do let's see, how did I I'm trying to think exactly how did that happen. I talked to Joey Wells about bringing Hart to City of Jackson, Mississippi. And then he said he would. And so I got in contact with a promoter there, and I thought my job was done. You know, Jackson wasn't even on the map. He actually said, there's comedians in Mississippi? I'm like, yeah, man, Carlos Miller, J.J. Williamson, Bo Peep. It's a lot of people. K-Dub. He's like, okay. So he got in contact with the guy, and they did an audition, and they sent tapes in. And the way it's supposed to work, I couldn't participate because I didn't start comedy in Mississippi.
Right.
You know, and so I was cool with that. I just want to make the connect for my state, you know. And so they sent the tapes in, and a lot of guys weren't ready. They weren't ready. They too much cussing, this is Comedy Central, you know. So it's, you can cuss, but it's still, you can't, you know. So they really weren't ready for something like that. And so he said, well, the talent pool's kind of, you know, shallow a little bit. We might need you to participate. Like, oh, okay. And so I went and did it, and I knocked it out the park. You know, the rest is history. They liked me so much. Comedy Central liked me that they offered me, you know, the 30 minute after that. So,
oh, so you got two things off of it.
Yeah, I got Heart of the City.
Oh, okay.
And then I got Next Level.
Yo, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize you got two things off of it.
Yeah.
So when you're preparing these sets, what is the preparation process for TV?
Well, you don't want to be too vulgar. The set has to flow. You don't want to give them too much because they'll edit your stuff down. Now you put someone else in control of your set.
They own it.
So if they tell you 25 minutes or they tell you 5 minutes, don't do more than 2 minutes over that. Don't give them a lot to chop because they'll chop it up. Their vision of what your funny should look like is not yours. So, that's one thing. And pay attention. Pay attention to, you know, what they tell you. Don't just, you know, don't go. Although I will say this, me being in the military and following rules all the time does not always work out. Because I've been in situations where they say, you know, we don't want a lot of cussing. And then everybody cusses but me. Like, what the hell? You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I cuss. I love to cuss. I love how cuss words taste in your mouth. They flow. I love that. I like to cuss. My best stuff is cussing. So, you know,
my best stuff is cussing.
Yeah, I love cussing. I you know, I could do churches. I do clean, but I like cussing. And when everybody else is cussing, it's like, what the fuck? You know?
But even in the preparation terms, like behind the scenes, are you creating a set list? Are you running through it out loud?
Well, you have to submit to them. You have to completely write out what you're doing. They have to go over every word.
Verbatim.
Yeah, they wow. Every word. You're supposed to stick to that, which, again, I'm the only one that follows directions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only one that follows directions. No one else, you know, seems to do that. But you're supposed to write it out and go word for word, you know, and they look at it, they approve it. They'll say, take this out, take that out, this, that, and other. So that's the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you rehearsing these sets?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because I get nervous. I'm just paralyzing, almost the stage fright type
stuff. Still?
Yeah, still.
Still?
Still.
Huh.
Every single time. No matter if it's 7 people or 7,000. Same.
What is the feeling?
Like I am about to die.
Yo, that dire.
It is, that anxiety is, you know, I did, I opened up for Cat Williams at Phillips, 17,000 people.
Jeez.
And,
oh my God.
The walk to the mic was probably about 30 yards because it's a huge stage, it's Phillips.
Oh my God.
And, Corey Zuman Miller was introducing me, which I've worked with him before. He's introduced me before. He's introducing me, and I'm at the edge of the steps to walk up and walk across stage. When he said, "Give it up for Marvin Hunter," my whole mind went blank.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing, not a word from the walk, from up the steps to the stage to the mic. I had nothing. And the minute I grabbed the mic, it came back.
Wow.
Because I was just that nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
Because being in front of 17,000 people, that's like some epic shit, dude. Like, you're just looking up like, oh my God. You know?
You probably only have to do like 3 minutes of material and the laughter's all the other time.
And then performing in front of that many people, you got to give yourself time. You got to let the punchline roll to the back of the room and come back. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, the biggest crowd I've been in front of was 1,800. Mm-hmm. And even at that level, I could feel the roll. Yeah. And like you could, what's cool about bigger crowds, mm-hmm. sometimes you can hear where the laughter starts and then it like grows across the room.
It grows.
It's so bizarre.
I am more comfortable in larger crowds, though. Not 17,000, but I am more comfortable in larger crowds than smaller crowds. I hate performing for like, you know, a dozen people. That
it's the speed bag.
Yeah, it's just,
that's the grunt work there. Oh, man. You got to keep swinging. In the big crowds, you can kind of just throw it out there and then let it drift.
Yeah.
And 17,000. Is that the biggest crowd?
Yeah.
You've ever?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. By far. Like, Yeah.
And crazy. You're probably high for weeks after that.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about comedy being like crack? Like, that hit.
But, you know, like, I straight have drop. Learned. Don't get too comfortable. You're only as good as your last performance, but that next performance, you're a bomb. So I I have always, the Lord showed me a long time ago, you're not allowed to be cocky.
Mm.
And so I don't allow myself to be cocky. Because every time in my life when I start feeling a little cocky, something bad happens.
Dude, me too.
So dude, I just take everything, okay, that happened, thank God, and I move on. I move on to the next thing because, you know, I just never really gloat.
Every single time for me,
yep,
something has happened that knocks you right off your horse.
Yep. Every fucking time. You go to feeling yourself a bird with shit on your head. Every time. It's coming. You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
After 17,000, what's your next show?
Cats.
Tuesday open mic.
Tuesday was with 30, with 40 people. Some shit like that, you know. My career is taking off. I'm out of here.
I've interviewed so many people who have been, they're like, one night I was opening up for Amy Schumer, and then the next night I'm in a bar with 10 people.
Yep.
That's the reality.
Yep. That's it, man.
That's comedy, man.
You got to have thick skin. You got to have thick skin. You see all the time, you see comedians, they get a big thing or they hit a big lick, and then now they're like, I just sit there like, okay. All righty. Just hope it lasts.
Yeah, so see how that works out for you there.
See how that works out.
You feeling yourself.
Yep.
Is that what big thing you see younger comics? Because you're out on the road. Like, you see.
Dude, but you know, I'm in my 40s, dude. I just, like I said, no nonsense. The younger comics today, they're so different because, like, even now, I've been doing this. If you put me in a room with a big name, like, say I'm in a room with D.L. Hughley or Jon Stewart, dude, I shut up. There's nothing credible I have to add to this conversation. Mm-hmm. My job is to shut up, be a sponge, and listen. The young comics today, trying to perform for me, and they don't understand you're being annoying. Be happy you're allowed to be in the room.
Oh, yeah.
You're being annoying. Shut up. No one wants to hear your $75 aspirations. This is a millionaire. If you listen, you might learn something, and that aggravates the living shit out of me. New comics, but that's not just new comics. That's younger people now. They just feel like they're equal. They feel like they're equal. So, you know, he's a man. You're like, I'm a man. No, but he's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you sell meat off the back of a truck. Well, this, you know, you come to the open mics. This is a guy here. He's established. You know, you're not the same. So in the industry, you might be the same in the eyes of God, but we're not, you know, we're down here. So
that's spiritual nourishment.
Yeah.
So I'm quoting your material now. Yeah. What are other things about younger comics that aggravate you?
I mean, just those type of things. Like certain comedy clubs, they allow the green room to be filled with too many open micers. Mm. Why are you here? Unless this is an open mic night, why are you here? You're being annoying to the headliner. And then you talk shit about the headliner. When the headliner doesn't want to talk to you, the headliner doesn't want you in his green room. That's his or her green room. Yes. Get out. Stay out. You should not be in there. You should not be asking questions. Get the fuck out of here. And a lot of times clubs will allow them to be in there because a lot of clubs don't want to pay features. So you don't want to pay features, so you'll fill the time with a bunch of open micers. And it's just bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a club owner out there listening to me, that's bullshit.
Yeah, that's what Ali Sadiq said on here was like, the green room is the headliner's room.
It's his sanctuary.
Yes.
Get your open mic ass out of there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Unless you're invited in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't go in there.
And I try to tell young comics too, a lot of things that are pissing you off now that you don't understand, you'll understand later as you go up the ladder. You know, a lot of times, you know, they don't understand when a headliner don't want a bunch of people going up before them. They don't get it. And I'm like, why would he? Why would he want you eating up all this freaking time, all the energy of the crowd? And then when he gets the crowd, they're tired. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's first of all, why are you trying to try to work out your material on a paid gig? There's coffee houses, there's bars, there's places around town you can do that. Not on a paid gig, you know? But can you be pissed with the younger comics, or should you be pissed with the older comics who are allowing it? Or the venue owners who are allowing it?
I don't know who's the blame, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. Because it's just like with anybody. They're gonna try to get away with what they can get away with. So if no one says anything, you know.
Well, younger comics should create the good habits now so then just become instinct later.
Yeah, I don't know. All that yapping, man. All that performing. And then trying out jokes on people. I'm a comic. I know you're trying out jokes. I know that didn't happen. That actually did not happen. You're trying out jokes. Stop it. You know?
In conversation?
Yeah. Go to an open mic. Go to open mic, you know what I'm saying?
But so just chill.
Just chill, man. Be happier in the room. If you talk to comics previously, they would tell you, when I was in the room such, I was just happy they allowed me to be there.
Totally.
I didn't speak. I didn't say nothing. Now, younger comics, actually, they want to talk to you like as if they're your equal. Shut up, dude. Don't say nothing. And then you piss the headliner off. You piss the A-list off. And now he want to walk off. And now we all missed out on some knowledge because you're being out. Piece of shit asshole here. So,
and when another thing young comics struggle with is like the booking aspect in general, even thinking beyond clubs and just creating like a road run and just like getting a nice tour going.
Yeah,
and you're pretty steady in the working. Like how you building that infrastructure?
Well, it's relationships. Huh. It's all about relationships. You know. Now we'll say this: we're in 2018. The younger comics really don't have to follow the old blueprints. Social media, you can go right around it. You can go right around it. The old guard is dying.
Yeah.
They're dying. And the young comics know it. And so in that respect, my aggravation with them is just mine alone. It'll never change because it's actually getting worse. Because they know they don't have to be respectful of the headliner because that's not going to get them anywhere. He's not going to remember them when they could just go to their phone, do a video and go right around his ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so that's where we're at now. And that's why I try to preach to a lot of older comics. You know, if you don't get your social media game up, you are going the way of the dinosaur. You are going to die. This is not going to work for you because it's changing. And you get old comics, like, fuck these internet motherfuckers. And hey, I feel you, but that energy could be placed elsewhere.
Yes.
You know, you're right. I get it. They're not as good. And they are cheating. They are skipping the line. They are doing all those things. But what are you going to do?
But the internet game's hard, too. Like, somebody may be funny on stage but can't translate it to online and vice versa.
But, you know, I was having this conversation with someone else about a couple of comics that me and this one person love, and we've been following them for years. They were on, you know, the Def Jam Comic View. Very quick, you're perfect for the internet. You don't believe you are.
Hmm.
You actually, the established comics could get online, and if they actually did it, they could run circles around all these people. You're already funny, especially the quick improv types.
Right.
You could dominate it, but you feel like it's beneath you. and you're going to be sitting around somewhere with some bell bottoms on, with your shirt tied in the front, like those disco motherfuckers pointing at hip hop. What are they doing? You know, you're going to be doing that. You're going to be that person. So, you should have get off the pot. So, you can't just sit around and point and grumble all the time. So, you know.
So that's your game. It seems like your social media is you just something's topical and you just rant about it.
Yeah,
that's the whole structure of it.
Well, yeah, because the grumpy uncle. And then when I don't rant, people say, "I want to hear you ranting." So it's like, well, I don't want to fuss all the time, but kind of like that's what they hear. But it's not an act. I mean, that's actually that's actually me, but it's not me all the time. So, but you know what I mean. But you got to do something. But I was doing the internet long before it started popping for comedians. That's why I have a little bit of a leg up. Because I've been on since MySpace. I've been doing shit.
MySpace? Mm-hmm. Ooh, throwback and, Thursday.
Yeah. So I've been doing it. I've been doing it for a minute. And I see these people, you know, they're talking, well, the internet comedians are stealing. Well, of course they're stealing. They're absolutely stealing. You can't go a year doing this and now you're headlining clubs and you have an hour of material. Absolutely not. Yeah, you're partaking of other people's shit. That enrages me. But what are we going to do? If the club is booking them, what are you going to do? You know? But anybody, and the public, you know, the public is kind of slow. They don't care. They just want you to make them laugh. And it's about an emotional connection with you. So they don't care if you tell a joke. They don't care about joke structure. They don't care about being authentic. They don't care. They like you. You know? So it took Steve Harvey and them 20 years to establish an emotional connection with the audience. It took Jess Hilarious a year.
Yeah.
Took Country Wayne a year to have the same type of reaction. People falling out when they see them and so.
Because you're in their pocket.
Yeah. There's a story just happened. I won't mention his name. There's a popular internet comedian who booked a gig at an established comedy club. He, in his contract, was 45 minutes to an hour. He couldn't do it. So the manager went up to the club and was complaining, "You got an open micers? You got anybody you can put up in front of them?" And it's a smaller market. They were like, "Look, this is not Atlanta, New York, or L.A. We don't have comedians falling out of trees. He signed a contract to do 45 to an hour. We expect him to fill that time." The manager says, "Well, I'll get up in front of him and do something."
The manager?
The manager. And then they're like, and the club is like, "What?" But they were like, "We don't care. Just long as you do the time so the waitress have time to, you know, do the tickets and get everything straight." The manager takes a CD up to the DJ. He's a rapper.
No.
There's three rap songs and they're horrible. Horrible. The club is appalled.
I would imagine so.
You know, but I asked him, "Will you ever bring him back?" Well, he did pack it out. So,
exactly.
So, I mean, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an old head comedian and you're bitching and you're not, A-listers are fine. They're fine. It's the ones right below the A-listers, like my class of comedian. Mm-hmm. If you don't adapt, it's going to be hard. This is about to be hard and very painful. You know what I'm saying? The paradigm is shifting. The landscape of comedy is changing. So
it's kind of like get with it or get run over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Nobody's sentimental about, the eloquence of the structure and verbiage of this joke. They're like,
you know, but white clubs are. Mainstream clubs, they don't really play that shit.
It's really weird how, you know? Like, it seems more of like an urban comedy thing than social media.
We got to light that stuff on fire on the internet. Put on a Spider-Man suit, cut the ass part out, walk across the screen. Stupid shit. Stupid shit. Like, what are you doing? Like, why we got to do this?
That's weird.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah, I you know what? I never thought about that till you just brought that up.
Yeah.
In the mainstream side, it's really more, there's still social media people, but it's not as rampant.
Not as rampant. They still put up people who have a setup, a punch, and, you know, and then with the agencies, you know, they have a bigger name and they have the people up under them. So the deal is, if you want our bigger guy, you'll book our smaller guy.
Yep.
And then he comes in there and he stinks up the place for a weekend, but you keep bringing it back. He don't pack the room. Nobody knows him. But when you go in there and you're certified funny. They know that because you can come in there with somebody and burn the stage down. I've had someone tell me this. I can't bring you back. What do you mean? I just watched you destroy my stage. I understand what you could do. But can't bring you back. No one knows you. And then you go look on their fucking calendar and you got all these freaking corpses.
Corpses.
And you're like, what the fuck? Like, no one knows them. So, you know. But it seemed like urban comedy, we got to light ourselves on fire. You gotta do it. Just, I mean, I don't know. It's very weird and unfair and stupid. But
why do you think that is?
I don't know.
I
don't know. I don't know why it's like that. They know what you can do. They know what you can do. They see you. You're funny. I've been on a show with an A-lister, and we've been in the green room, and he's told the owner right in front of me, "You got to book this guy. You got to bring him back. You see what he can do." And then the guy's like, "Yeah, man, you are amazing." And you go back, "Well, we'll see." Mm-hmm. And then you never come back.
So how do you book stuff normally? Like you said, referral.
Well,
or?
You gotta get representation. I have people. You know, I will say I'm not signing anyone, but I have people making phone calls for me and do that type of stuff, and I do it myself. Well, a lot of it is referrals. It's referrals, so it's just weird. It's weird. There's a comic that was on the Last Comic Standing, a good guy, a mainstream guy, and I went down to the Orlando Improv to feature for him just to let the people see me instead of another. Well, yeah. I burned him. Not on purpose. It's just that he couldn't follow what I was doing. Person after person. You should have headlined. The management was hearing it. Have I been back? No. So I don't know. And that's no knock on them. It's a weirdness. It's just weird. It's just very, very weird.
Yeah, but that's what I'm struggling with is getting booked outside of Atlanta more consistently. So I was hoping you had insight.
Well, it's relationships.
Just relationships.
Relationships,
just be around.
It's relationships. It's all relationships with me. Mm-hmm. You know, Atlanta has a good reputation and a bad reputation. So, you know, I find that the good reputation is they know we're going to kill a stage. They know that.
Yeah.
They know it because we're bred to do it here because the crowds are animals when it comes to you not being funny. You have 30 seconds or you're getting destroyed. Hmm. So we take that other places. Well, other places is not that direct. Maybe New York or whatever, but you go out to L.A. and they're like, hey, what's going on? Nice day today. Hey, dude.
Oh, they lean into it. Yeah.
Dude, you get killed. And then they come to Atlanta and they get destroyed. So
I love it.
Yeah, so. But then that's a knock. You know, they say, you know, Atlanta's too ghetto. The crowds are too, you know, rude or whatever, but you're not funny. Or you're not funny fast enough. So, I don't know. Because we can go out there.
Yep.
And go throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
You come here, what the fuck is that? hey. Yep. So
that was my favorite part. Like the first trip I did to New York, I was just like, oh man, there's bad comedy everywhere.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's like that. Yeah. New York and LA, you're like nervous the first time. And then you're like, oh, never mind. Yeah. There's just more comics to suck at comedy.
You know, I went to LA my first time out there, and I went to this particular club and literally did not laugh one time. And it was such a letdown because it's my first time in L.A. I'm so amped to be here. Mm-hmm. I'm just living in the blessing, man. I'm just, oh, man. You know, and I go there and everybody's up there eating bowls of dicks. Everybody's eating bowls of dicks. And you're sitting there and you're looking around like, what are you laughing about? They're like, oh. You're sitting there like, what is, and there's something wrong with me. Like, what's happening? You look at other comics, and then some comics who know you're from Atlanta, they look at you and they laugh because they know
you're not
feeling this, and this is stupid. But they're patient. The crowds are patient out there. They'll allow you to explore different things and stuff. This girl's up there talking about dad's being a pedophile, and that's funny. And I just, what the fuck?
Right.
How is this funny? And you're just looking around like, oh, my God. But you know,
so what are you doing now to like kind of pave your own path?
Well, I'm trying to get into acting.
Okay.
Shot a small thing in A-Ball MJG story a couple of weeks ago, played the bouncer. But I'm trying to get into acting, man. Try to make that transition. I like Atlanta. You know, most comics say this is just a stepping stone. I actually like it here. I bought a house. I like it here, you know?
Yeah, me too.
I don't really plan on moving unless I get some type of opportunity, you know? You'll never hear about me just, well, he's just up and moved to L.A., up and moved to New York. That's not going to happen. You know, I want to try to get in. I feel like the grumpy uncle persona has legs, a lot of legs.
I agree.
You know, not a lot of that on TV. And I've gotten a lot of, you know, people kind of recognizing it. I just need to keep my nose to the grindstone, just do my thing and build my social media up. Have a robust social media. You can write your own ticket. That's where we're headed. You can write your own ticket. And that's what I'm trying to do, because this shit's out here getting crazy.
Yeah, that's the resume. Social media.
Yeah.
It's like instant credibility.
Instant credibility. If you go anywhere. You see, it used to be you could go to a show, you do well, and somebody in the audience, or if there was a promoter or somebody, they would come out and say, hey, man, here's my card. I like you. We got to get you in a spot. Doesn't happen anymore. You know, they go to social media. Mm-hmm. They recruit from social media. So you doing a good job on stage is still good, but not like it was.
It's only part of it.
Only part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I tell young comics all the time, get your social media. And then the fact that there's young comics out here who don't deal with social media. I'm like, you're screwing up. You're screwing up, man. I had a comic not too long ago. I was up in North Carolina. He was like, tell me how I can do it. I was like, get on your social media. Well, I was thinking that I was going to try to do it the traditional way. Do that too, but get on your social media. It's very, very important.
Well, like what I did is, you know, I've been doing comedy like 8.5 years now. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even start really self-promotion until maybe 6 or 7 years in, mm-hmm. after I had like a product worth selling.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to do any promotion until like mm-hmm. I felt like I was ready and had a product to back up whatever I was promoting.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be funny online and then you show up and,
yep.
you know, it's like, it's kind of like putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. People show up online. And then you got a lot of the, I don't know what you want to call it. You got, it's in the urban community. Not just period. Mainstream comics shit on urban. Urban shits on mainstream. Gospel shits on everybody. It's like, it's a lot of that.
Oh,
a lot of
that, know that
stupid stuff going on. And then I'm always raw with it. And I always say, if you got an urban comic and he's railing or poking fun at comics who do mainstream, it's because his bitch ass can't do it.
Exactly.
He can't do it.
Exactly.
That's why he's pointing out the faults. But if you have a mainstream comic who's bitching out urban, it's because his bitch ass can't do it. That's what, oh, they're rude. They're just, no, you're not funny. You're not funny enough to do that. If you got a gospel comic, because I've had this shit, hating on other comics because they can work clean and come in there. That's because you can't come down here. I can come up there where you at and do clean, uh-huh. but you can't come down here and do what I do, so you want to hate on me. And there's too much of that shit going on, too. You know what I'm saying? It's just make everybody laugh.
Yeah, that's like my number one advice for like younger comics when they ask me is, well, just live on stage.
Yeah.
And live on any stage.
My favorite story about you was my first time seeing you was at Jay Paul's.
Oh my, Southside.
And I remember thinking, this white guy doesn't understand. What's he doing in here? Like, did someone tell him? Like, and I was new. I was new to the city too. So I'm just pretty quiet. I'm just watching. I'm like, oh shit, does he know a couple people got shot in here? Does he know it? And I did. I was scared for you. Like how a child's riding a bike with training wheels for first. And you're like trying to, hey. You know, like that shit.
Yeah.
And I remember you went up there and they were being complete assholes that night. And you turned your chair around to the wall. And you did your whole set talking to the wall. And I thought I was like, this guy has a pair. Like this dude has a pair. And you taught me because I was in there because somebody had went to the car and tried to get a gun to shoot Carlos the week before. Or some stupid shit. Man. And you know, Jay Paul's like, that was like,
I remember.
Yeah. The best environment for comedy, especially seeing the history of it. You know what was happening back in the day,
because it shut down a couple times right for shootings, right?
Yeah. You know, and
I don't know what I was doing.
And I'm new to the city, and I'm just, you know, I'm same thing you said, living on stage. I'm everywhere, every night. I'm out. And that was the Wednesday night. That was the late spot Wednesday night. So, you know, it was almost an hour away from me too, and I should make that drive.
Yeah. So. And with the mirror wall.
Yeah.
It is just grungy.
Yeah, very.
It's like a dejected strip club.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, did you do Candy Shop? Did you ever do Candy Shop?
Yeah,
Milkshake Mondays.
Oh, the cock-eyed stripper? See, cock-eyed people should never give non-verbal cues. See, because you can't follow that shit. And she would give come hither looks and walk people all over the fucking place because she's cockeyed. So the one night, big Hurricane Andrew hosted it, right?
Yep, it was Hurricane Andrew.
So I think it was Mope with she, you know, the strippers, after they're done stripping, they would leave, but some of them would stay and watch the show. She stayed one night.
Yeah.
And she sat close to the stage and she was cockeyed. And it was, her eyes were tangled up bad. It was, they were tangled up bad. And the comic started in on her.
I remember. I was there.
Oh, and she quit.
Yeah.
She quit that night.
Yes. She quit.
She quit that night. I felt bad for her, but you know, you're in a situation where you're sad this is happening, but you're happy you're here to see it.
You liberated her.
Yeah.
You freed her, man.
She quit. They were talking about her eyes so bad, man.
I remember Hurricane Andrew was like, I can't believe y'all made fun of her eyes. She didn't see it coming.
Yeah, then he started pouring gas on the situation. Candy shop, yeah.
Because that's all it was. It was supposed to be a comedy show, and it turned out to be like a roast.
Yeah, yeah.
We just started roasting everyone.
Yep.
And that was a strip club on its last legs right there.
Man, it was horrible.
I remember that was my lesson in, I think the flyer said 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, here we go. And then midnight, bro. No. Midnight it started.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned that.
Yeah, you learned that.
Yeah.
Candy shop. I forgot about that.
I should have been mugged multiple times. I don't know how I
never
was.
Dude, you used to be in some real seedy spots. I used to be like, okay, you, but Ben too. You and Ben.
Yeah, me and Ben.
Ben Palmer. Shout out to Ben Palmer.
Yeah, Ben Palmer. He's out in LA now.
Yep.
People would get us mixed up.
Yeah.
I would get called Ben. I was like, I'm a tall blonde dude. He's a shorter, like brown
Ben actually
dude.
Got punched though. At a
he
place.
Did. At, at that club by the bowling alley.
Yeah.
Over by 85,
yep,
where all the strip clubs
are.
And
he kept performing, didn't he? He kept performing after he got punched, right?
Yeah, and everybody was freaking out. And then Ben was like, you guys act like you never seen someone get hit before. That was funny. And his super monotone. Yeah. I don't remember what that place was called, but that was a nightclub that was a terrible setup.
Yeah, it's still horrible. It's a restaurant now, but the service is horrific, whatever. But
No wonder they didn't make it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Duh, yeah, there's too many... just comedy, and you see it on TV and you're like, oh, look at Marvin on Comedy Central. And then you're like, oh, but you didn't see the years doing strip clubs and nightclubs.
Dude, I did Kill Michael, Mississippi, and I had to drive off the regular road, off into the woods on Rocky Road. And it was just these acres of land that just one family owned. So there was a trailer here and a trailer there and a shotgun house here. You drive all the way to the back, and there was a double wide trailer. That was a fucking club. The freaking flyer made it look beautiful, though. The flyer was very classy. They had a lady in a school desk out on the road taking the money. If this wasn't some Harpo juke joint shit from The Color Purple. Like, dude, what in the hell? Dude. And it's like, you know, too much information. But my dad did a lot of hustles, and he was also an exterminator. Huh. So I used to go on jobs with him. So I literally can smell roaches.
Wow.
If you have a really bad roach problem, I could smell it. It's a pungent, slight odor. And it was bad. And they went in there cooking food and everything. I was just, I'm not eating anything.
It was called Kill Michael?
Kill Michael, Mississippi.
Kill Michael, Mississippi.
The club was some type of club elites or something, but it was a double ride trailer. It was a double ride trailer in the back. But I've done some stuff. I mean, I've done in the storeroom of a pizza joint. I did a show. Back you had to walk through. Everybody's eating pizza. They were like, well, these people going. We're going to the back to do a show.
Storeroom.
They had Christmas lights hung from the ceiling and a little pallet in their front. I've done all types of shit, man. I've done family reunions in the backyard, kids are running all between your legs when you're trying to perform.
Uh-huh.
All types of stupid shit.
Yeah, I did a fall festival where a kid came up in the middle of my set asking for an autograph on their iPad. In the middle of the show.
Dude.
And I was like, how do you want me to sign this? She was like, I just type it in. I was like, all right.
Dude, I had a dude, they were doing raffles in between each comic, and I got up there. I thought they were done because I was a headliner. And I'm looking on the floor, and there's still more purses to give away. I just made mention of it. Oh, shit. Oh, you're not done? And I was speaking to the promoter who I could see. Oh, you're not done? You have more purses? I was like, okay, ladies, somebody's going to get lucky after this and get some more prizes. He took that as I was telling him to come up and do it. He came up on stage with the whole fucking raffle shit in the middle of my fucking set, and we'd stop and raffle the purses off.
Did you have to finish after?
Oh, you know, I gave him about another 15 to get off.
Oh, another 15.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm not doing this.
Well, started from the bottom. Now we're here.
Yeah, man. Trying, man. Long way to go still, though. But yeah, absolutely. Yes. Proud of you, what you're doing, man, too.
Yeah?
For real. For
man, real. I appreciate shit. That.
Good shit.
What you like about it? Tell me more.
I How like awesome the fact, I like this. I think that the Hollywood, True Hollywood Story with Charlie Murphy thing, when that came out, it sparked something, an interest in podcast. People just want to hear people talk and mm-hmm. tell different things and stuff like that. And you're the only one that I know that really is doing the comedy wise here in Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? And the way you just started kind of small and you're building, man, it's good stuff. It's good stuff, man. It's a good market for that. Look at Carlos and them. They took a podcast and they're millionaires or whatever. You
Media
know what I'm saying?
Company
yeah, yeah.
Now.
They're,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
doing a thing. So yeah, you're right there on the ground floor, man. You know what I'm saying? You're ahead of the curve. So
man, I appreciate stuff. You. Good yeah. This all started with Atlanta comedy and it's grown. And you know, you jumped the line. Like I went out in LA and got some interviews, but you're cutting in front of some of those peeps just because ATL comedy, baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got something to promote on Comedy Central. Let's get it out there.
Yeah, man. Hey, September the 7th.
Yeah, yeah.
Comedy Central, 11 o'clock Eastern time. I will be 30 minutes. And then the Grumpy Uncle Tour starts at the Funny Bone in Virginia Beach on September the 19th, and Richmond, Virginia Funny Bone is the next day, September the 20th.
Okay.
Grumpy Uncle Tour coming at you.
And you have a podcast too, right?
I do, the Grumpy Uncle Speaks podcast. The Grumpy Uncle Speaks. And then also my social media, my Instagram is Comedian Marvin H. That's Comedian Marvin H on Instagram and Twitter. It's not for the faint of heart, as Joel could tell you.
It is not.
I act a complete fool. It's not a church page. Let's just say that. You know what I'm saying? Also, Marvin Hunter's fan page on Facebook and Marvin Hunter on Facebook. So,
boom.
Yeah.
Well, Marvin Hunter, man, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Hey, man, the stupid shall be punished.
Stupid shall be punished.
Chief told me that when I was a young sailor, and that stuck with me for the rest of my life. The stupid shall be disgusted and punished.
Wow.
So don't be stupid.
Preach on.
Yep.
Marvin Hunter, thanks for being on Hot Breath, man.
Thank you, man. Hot Breath.
That's awesome. Hot Breath. There you go, Hot Breath-averse. Hot Breath episode number 146 is officially in the books. Take note, young comics. Marvin was full of wisdom on how you can actually become a really good comedian the right way. So thank you to Marvin for the time. Thank you, listeners, for your valuable time. If you did enjoy this, all I ask, just share it with someone. Yes, you can leave an iTunes review, which is greatly appreciated. Yes, you can subscribe on iTunes. But most importantly, if there's one thing you could do immediately right now after listening to this, that is to share it with someone. I cannot tell you how much my heart smiles when I'm out at shows and people compliment the podcast or I get feedback online. It really does keep this Hot Breath-averse a spinning, if you will, and keeps it orbiting. So let's keep adding planets to this orbit. Does that make sense? I don't know. I went liberal arts school, so I don't know what orbits are or whatever. I saw Space Jam. That's about as far as my space knowledge goes. So anyway, this was definitely a masterclass just on comics being real and authentic and the big mistakes that a lot of young comics are making. So if you know a young comic out there, definitely share this with them or an OG comic who'd like to hear as well. This is what it's all about, is just comedy mastery. So thank you for your time with that. Definitely, if you like me and you want to see more of me, I host a weekly show at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia. JoelByersComedy.com is the website with my schedule. Also links to the podcast. Also links to my comedy class. I teach a stand-up comedy class. I also teach a podcasting class. So let's collab. Let's get with it. Or get run over. I don't know. I just wanted to say that because that was also in the interview. But anyway, we'll get out of here. So that's really it. You know, I love you so much. You know, every Monday we're releasing these. Every Monday I've got my producer Amon Garner here and keeping it sounding crystal clear. Hit him up for any audio needs. Well, he has a podcast network now, boldkoi.com. boldkoi is the boy. So hit him up if you have any other needs. Matt Franklin actually helped out with the video on this one. He has a company, Most Uniquest, that he runs. This dude's been filming a lot of my comedy shows as well. Now we're picking it up on the podcast side. So hit up Matt Franklin as well. Website? MostUniquest.com. The Hot Breathiverse is growing, Hot Brethren and Sistren. This was a big step this week. We're only going to keep growing from here. So thank you for being a part of these beginning stages. And of course, I almost forgot that I have to thank my wife at the end of these because she made the theme song. So thank you, honey. Thank you. She made this theme song. We also have our own podcast called Buyer's Life where you can hear me complain more. But this is my baby here. The Hot Breath is comedy is my baby. I love it. Almost, I love my wife more. I shouldn't have said comedy's my baby right after talking about my wife. I love my wife, and I love comedy. Not as much as my wife, but, you know, love. So anyway, if you're listening this far into it, I love you because you are a true member of the Hot Breathiverse. So I will not punish you anymore with this rambling. So every Monday, we're back here, everybody. So until next Monday... Right here on Hot Breath.
Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.